open. A couple housekeeping things first. Senate Bill 20 will be up first. Let me ask you all something about 336, because I was just informed by some folks that there are some amendments to this bill. The amendments are not out yet. The amendments would be important to consider in some with respect to the hearing. We did not anticipate that many people coming to testify from all over the place on the bill. And so I just told a few folks in the hall that I was not going to open up a public hearing, but some of these people have driven for more than 100 miles, and so we'll try and get in some testimony on 336. But I will say this, of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, so about 10 people that signed up, if you're people that are in the here building regularly, don't testify this morning because this bill will be up again, and Senate Bill 20 has a lot of people to testify, and we've only got 1 hour to do it. So I will call the people on 336 that drove from a long ways off. And what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to call the names out very quickly, and do me a favor, just holler out if you can skip your testimony so that I don't call on you when the time comes. So for 336, Chuck Wolesborn.
Oh, some people may have signed up on the wrong sheet.
Oh, you signed up for 20? That's okay. Put Chuck's name down on 20. There it is. It's all right. We'll get you taken care of, Chuck. Rick Jacobson. Well, you all are doing very well this morning.
Batting 1,000.
That's right. Dwight Wolf.
That should be 20.
Still batting 1,000.
Lynn Bowers.
20.
Yeah, maybe. John Laraway, I would guess you're 20.
Same report.
Chris Anderson. Steve Gapp, you're a 20, aren't you?
You may get
Steve Gapp, Marion County, were you here for Senate Bill 20? Okay, Steve is off for now unless he comes back in. And then Peggy Lynch, I'll bet you got it right, didn't you?
I did, thank you. And, oh, wait.
Thank you. That being the case, we will not hear 336 this morning because that's the extent of the list. So what I will do is I will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 20. And Sue, if you don't mind giving us an update.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 20 restricts spraying of pesticide near school property, requires filing of a written plan with the Department of Agriculture or State Forester before applying pesticide, creates a civil penalty for violations not to exceed $2,500, allows the Department and State Forester to assess fees for filing written applications. There is a proposed amendment that clarifies that government bodies, local government, have the authority to spray pesticide for vector control. And we have received 14 letters in opposition that are on the dais for your information, and one letter from the Sierra Club in support.
Very good. Thank you, Sue. What I'm going to do is bring folks up three at a time. There is a lot of people that want to testify. I want to make sure you all get in, but this hearing will have to end at 8:30. Actually, a little before because we have one other bill. So keep your testimony to a couple minutes if you can. If you have written testimony you're submitting, don't feel the need to read it verbatim into the record. Just summarize it for us. And as best you can, if people have already said what you're going to say, then try and say something different because that just will help the committee out tremendously. So to start, Lisa Arkin, Kay Friedman, and Paul Engelking.
And
oh, I'm sorry, Senator Walker.
With
yeah, I'm sorry, Senator Walker, why don't you come up? Senator Metzger, you'll be next, and then we will start with Lisa Kay and Paul. Are you Lisa?
Yeah, she's part of the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7. I'm glad that I can always bring a crowd to your committee. And it's absolutely shocking to find one of my own colleagues testifying in opposition to my bill. All kidding aside, I'm here with Lisa Arkin from my community with Oregon Toxics Alliance, and they asked me to introduce this legislation, and it is supported in my community by a number of folks. It's supported by the Lane County Education Service District, Lane County Intergovernmental Relations Committee, Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, Oregon Center for Environmental Health, Oregon Sierra Club, the City of Eugene, and Osburgh. Quite an impressive list. Let me tell you what Senate Bill 20 does not do. And then Ms. Arkin, after my testimony, will go into a little bit more details. Senate Bill 20 does not restrict private residential use within buffer zones. It does not restrict pesticide use outside the one-mile buffer zone. And it does allow the use of pesticides for vector control or any kind of infestation or emergency. And also, some people are quite concerned about the bill's effects, the broad effects of the bill. And, Mr. Chair, as you know, and many other people in this building know, I'm pretty passionate about the legislation that I introduce, but I'm also one of the most eager people to try to resolve the concerns that folks have. So as I have to leave to chair my own committee here in a little bit, and so my staff will be listening, and if there are places where we can go to compromise, we will take a look at that. Pesticide drift, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, is just like secondhand smoke. These secondhand pesticides, like secondhand cigarette smoke, can cause serious adverse health effects, and they're forced on others without their knowledge or consent. Now, are pesticides evil and bad? No. Pesticides are a necessary part of agriculture. I think that the science is always moving towards finding a pesticide that has less effects than others, but there are problems when we aerial spray and it impacts people without their consent. Earlier this week, Ms. Kay Friedman came to see me to talk to me about her own daughter, and she's here to testify, so I'm going to let her do that. But she is one of many who have seen pesticides affect their children and their brain development and their growth. The 1999 to 2003 incident rate for cancers in Oregon children was 15.3 percent higher per 100,000 than the national rate of 14.7. Pesticides that have been detected on Oregon school grounds by the Department of Agriculture. Drift investigations are those pesticides that are medically, in the medical literature, is associated with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and leukemia. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, childhood autism is experiencing a 10 to 17% annual growth rate, or one diagnosis per 166 people. Is pesticide linked to autism? We don't know. We actually don't know what is causing the high incidence of autism in Oregon, but it's important for us to take a look at all of the things that may be impacting people and their development. All those origins are not known. The alarming rising rates give us pause and concern. Lisa Arkin is here with me today. She's Executive Director of the Oregon Toxics Alliance. I've asked her to summarize the pertinent data on chemical drift, children's health, and examples of other states that require buffer zones to protect children and endangered species. And many of the other folks that are here to testify can give their own information about that, as well as I'm sure lots of farmers will tell you that they will go out of business if we put this in place, and maybe even some timber industry. But the world has not come to an end as we know it, Mr. Chair. It's simply we want to be a little more enlightened. And I'll turn the microphone over to Ms. Arkin. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Walker. And you don't need to be real close. Oh, great. And I appreciate being here. Thank you, Chair Avakian, and members of the committee. I want you to know that I came to care about the issue of pesticide drift because
Lisa,
I am...
we needed to put your name on the record, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. I am Lisa Arkin, and I'm Executive Director of the Oregon Toxics Alliance.
Thank you. Go right ahead.
Okay. I want you to know that I came to care about pesticides because I'm the mother of two children who each attended 6 years of elementary school in a rural school in Lane County. In a few moments, I'll show you a slideshow of mapped data gathered from the Oregon Department of Forestry that show pesticide spray on the timberland directly adjacent to the school playground where my children went for every year that they attended that school. I was stunned, as were other parents, to see the amount and the frequency of pesticide spray being applied to the land near that school. And the data indicates that my children's school is representational of other rural schools. And so I urge you to support Senate Bill 20 on behalf of the 98,000 Oregon children who attend rural schools. Let me introduce a little bit of the bill and, first of all, call your attention to the packet that you were given. In this packet, you will find information on the science of drift, creating a scientific basis for the proposal for drift buffer zones for schools. You will find information on legal precedents for buffer zones in other states and for endangered species. You'll find comments from people like Commissioner Bill Fleenor from Westlane County, who talks about how many constituents he has had come to him to talk about the issue of pesticide drift, and a copy of Lane County Code, where buffer zones are already in effect, and they have a very successful five-year history of pesticides as a last resort for roadside spray. They have not used pesticides on roadsides in 5 years, and the recent report, which you have in your packet, that was just given by the given to the Lane County Board of Commissioners, finds that roadsides are in perfectly good health. You also find information on the economic costs of pesticide exposure to children's health. Senate Bill 20 establishes buffer zones that are protective around schools in order to separate frequent pesticide applications and the innocent bystander, in this case school children, who attend school for more than 180 days every year. Most of them are usually at the same site year after year. And buffer zones are the most effective way to protect these children from health impacts associated with even low levels of exposure to herbicides and pesticides. The bill also restricts aerial pesticide spray along the major roads leading to and from school just during those times when children are coming and going. And this is not a unique requirement. As I mentioned, Lane County Code already restricts roadside spray near bus stops and other places where children gather to attend school during the time before and after school. The bill also requires that pesticide applicators file a similar kind of written plan they currently file with the Department of Forestry and the Department of Agriculture if they spray. This would require it if they're spraying within certain miles of the school. The purpose of the written plan is to demonstrate that sensitive sites are identified so they can be avoided, and that the pesticide, its concentration, and the location of the spray operation are reported to the school district. Please note that pesticide applicators already file notifications and written plans about their commercial operations to these agencies at this time under the law. And as Senator Walker mentioned, it already allows for vector control, infestations, and other official emergencies. This bill is a starting place for serious discussion. We are always open and willing to work on the amendments and to go based on the science as to what's best for our children. So I hope that we can have those discussions following this hearing. Eight other states have already considered the science and moved to require buffer zones. Oregon would not be a leader. We would be doing the right thing and following what other states have already seen fit to do. So let's not quibble over whether buffer zones are required or not. Let's just get to work to protect children's health. I'm sorry, I'm not the greatest tech person, but we'll try here. So you can see in this picture that drift. Let's see if I can get it up there. There we go. Drift does occur, and it's just a normal and natural part of pesticide spray. And as Senator Walker said, it's like secondhand smoke. It's silent. It's unseen. Its vapors can move through the air and cause injury to unsuspecting bystanders. Environmental contaminants pose a greater risk to children than adults. Consider this. Children have a longer life expectancy in which to develop diseases with long latency periods. So, for example, a 50-year-old adult and a 5-year-old child are exposed to a carcinogen with a 40-year latency period, that child has a much higher lifetime risk of developing serious health consequences that affect the quality of their life. I hope you do look closely at the packet of materials, but I'd like to make three points and then move on to some information about school drift. Drift happens, and it's fairly common. Drift complaints are filed in Oregon every year, and industrial documents indicate that the industry admits to the problem of drift and continues to struggle with how to control all the factors. Drift happens at school. That's point number two. At least 4 cases of drift onto school grounds have been reported to the Department of Agriculture in Oregon, and many are suspected to go unreported. And third point is drift is bad for children. Okay. I'd like to show you the data from the school where my children attended. This is Twin Oaks School, and it's a very, very brief slideshow. I'll just pop right up. So, this is an aerial photograph. You see the school in the middle. Ooh. There's the school with the forestry operation behind it, and the running track of the school. And here comes the playground. So you get a sense of the place where my children went to school for 6 years. And there's a map just showing what would a 1 mile buffer zone look like. And here, starting in 1990, these are spray data that was filed with the Oregon Department of Forestry. 1993, that's directly north of the playground. The little red dot is the school. 94, 95, you can see spray occurs in the same places year after year. And the winds come from the northwest and blow directly toward the school. 1997. We have the raw data for any of this if you are interested in seeing how these graphs were produced. 98, 1999. Again, remember that the red circle is the 1 mile boundary there, just an imaginary boundary. 2001, 2003, and this is pretty close to Eugene city limits, although it is rural Lane County. 2004, 2005, 2006, and here's a composite right there of all the years. Okay, close up, please. I'd like you to turn to page 3 of my testimony, if you could, and we'll just quickly examine the data that came from the Department of Agriculture of schools in Oregon that have reported spray incidences.
Lisa, I just want to caution you, too. I know you're only on page 3 of your 6-page.
Oh, no. I'm just, this is it, and I'm done.
Okay.
Thank you so much for reminding me.
I passed her note.
Yep.
Mr. Chair.
So, on page 3, you'll see a graph there of 4 incidences at school grounds where the Department of Agriculture came out and tested and found residue of pesticide applications on the school grounds. This is Chehalem School. Yes. And Antonia Crater, and you can see the blue line is a half a mile. The purple is where the fields where the pesticide spray came off. The drift traveled onto the school grounds. The school was closed. Illnesses were reported. And samples confirmed drift at 348 feet from the edge of the agricultural field. And the next one is Y East. This is in Hood River County. They found chloropyrifos and other insecticides in this one, and a significant odor was detected. And the last one is Jefferson High School, where drift samples were positive for 2,4-D. And you can see there that the configuration, especially the running track right next to the field. So my point there being That drift has already occurred in Oregon. Our own agencies have the data for it. They suspect other cases go unreported. And so we hope that we can continue to talk to you about protecting children from drift as well as continuing our vibrant agricultural basis in Oregon. I thank you very much.
And I don't think we'll take questions on every panel, but are there any? Senator Misarkin, Senator Pozanski.
Yeah, I just want to get some things on the record since Senator Walker said they were looking for amendments. On page 2, where we talk about on section 3, line 4, it talks about who this applies to, and this is pesticide applicator, trainee, and such. It seems to me, unless it's already defined in somewhere in the other statutes, we need to have definitions. I heard your testimony saying it would not apply to homeowners applying it, and so I'm not sure how that is defined. Also, would it pertain to someone that was working their own land in the sense of a farmer or a forester who was applying the chemicals themselves? I think is important to me, as much as I support the concept, we have language in here that talks about 1 mile of a road that services a school property. This is line 9 on page 2.
Mm-hmm.
And you take the example that you've used, Lisa, up there from your where your children went to school. Bailey Hill Road is an extremely long road. And does that apply to 18th at Bailey Hill?
No, 1 mile from the school.
Well, the way that's currently written, I would suggest that you may want to tighten that language because the way I read it, it says within 1 mile of a road that services school property. Does not say within 1 mile radius of the school on that road. And to me, the concepts here, I understand it, and I appreciate the concerns. Many of the people that you've talked about have come to talk to me. But as it's currently written, it's very broad, mm-hmm. and I think it will cause more confusion. And we need to make certain that we are carrying out the intent that you have as compared to how the text can be defined and written.
Senator Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple quick questions, if I could. Number one, does it in the spring occur during the time the kids were in school, or was it during the summer months when the kids were out of school?
Each time was when kids were in school. To the occasion the kids were on the playing field and had to be evacuated.
And follow-up, Mr. Chair. You had an opportunity to check your kids to see if they have any contaminants in them now?
I have not done any blood tests.
And the third question, going back again to this the situation about the 1 mile of the road, I'm a little concerned that the language you have here is correct. Kids in rural areas commonly stand outside waiting for the bus to come. And I remember an incident many, many years ago when in those days we used to apply a type of insecticide that actually was a neurotoxin, and some kids in Washington State were actually sprayed by it. When we went to school, we started having convulsions. This is old stuff. It's not used anymore.
Okay.
But what it illustrates is kids can be standing outside waiting for a bus and get hit by a spray, too. So I think that language needs to be looked at really carefully. When I first read it, my first thought was the same as Senator Brzezinski's. As I thought about it more, I'm thinking about kids standing waiting for the bus and getting sprayed while they're waiting for the bus. So that's, I'm not sure you craft that language to get that. On the other hand, a road that's 50 miles long that's got no kids on it is a different situation. So I think there needs to be some work done on that language.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bates, that is a very good question, and some folks have come in to talk to me about their concern because their children do wait for the bus. And aerial spraying will sometimes occur very early in the morning when there's no wind, and these children in the rural communities wait out at the bus stop very early in the morning. So it is
my children's
concern.
Did.
Okay. Senator Misarkin, thank you very much. Senator Metzger.
Thank you for your gracious time.
Thank you very much.
Senator Metzger can't be late for committee, so I think he won't be able to testify today.
I think you've been excused.
I'll be quick.
I think you've been excused.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Rick Metzger, State Senator, District 26, and since I am in Senator Walker's committee and don't want to be reprimanded on the knuckles with her very heavy gavel, I will be very brief so I can attend committee. You're going to hear from a number of folks today, so I'm not going to go through all the little details in the bill. A few of them you've mentioned, Senator Przonski. I looked at that, too. I said, I've got two schools on Highway 26, and it's a long, long highway. And as we all get bills out of legislative council, there's always a lot of things that aren't quite right, so I'm not going to just nitpick all that. But I want to speak more globally about the issue. I appreciate Senator Walker and her constituent bringing this bill forward, because I think... and certainly her heart is in the right place, because this really is an issue. I mean, protecting our kids should be our number one issue. And we work in this building on many fronts. Every one of you up the dais are working on issues to protect kids. So I wouldn't want that effort or any of my comments to detract at all from continuing to pursue how we protect kids from things such as pesticides. But Senate Bill 20 doesn't really solve our problem. It creates a lot of problems, however well-intentioned it is. It was interesting in the graph that was given. There was a picture of YE School in Hood River. I represent the entire Hood River County. Representative Clem's family farm is right next to the school in Parkdale. You have YE School. You have Hood River Valley High School. And they are diagonally just right through Hood River Valley. The five-mile limitation for submitting a plan and applying pesticides would basically wipe out the entire Hood River County. That would be the 15 miles of the orchard areas as each of those schools are put into place. So I think it's really, really important as we kind of look at these types of issues to look at the impacts of those and try to put things together so that we look at things side by side. And the only thought I'm going to leave you with, and this is why it's really important as we look at all these bills in context rather than our independent silos of our committees. I was in a committee 3 weeks ago, in a House Education, where we have a bill also from my constituents in Hood River asking to site a school in farmland in Hood River, because it's cheaper to buy land outside the urban growth boundary in order to put a school. And we all have difficulty siting schools and the cost. And now we have Senate Bill 20, that talks about, well, you don't want to be sure you're not spraying when you're around a school. Well, some written testimony has been submitted from some of my constituents in Hood River in opposition to Senate Bill 20, but I want to illustrate why we have things the way we do, why we try to avoid, like, for example, putting schools in farmland, because it's cheaper than we put them out in farmland, then we tell all the farmers they can't be in business anymore. So it's really important to put this in context. Again, I appreciate the bill coming forward, because it's an issue that needs to be addressed. I don't think this gets anywhere near to addressing that. It does have a lot of unintended consequences, and I think those were pretty well articulated even by the proponent of the bill. So it is an important issue. I wouldn't want that to be dismissed, but it creates tremendous problems for agriculture, for what we're trying to do. I mean, the Section 3 that says you have to have a plan, to avoid the drift. Hood River Valley is drift. I mean, it's the Columbia River Gorge. It's the national windsurfing champion, and there's a reason for that, and there's wind. So I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. I'll go back with Senator Walker so I don't get my knuckles wrapped. You'll hear some technical details, but I would only ask that the issue be worked on. I think it's a great one to work on the interim and find out how do we do protect kids somehow other than the vehicle of Senate Bill 20.
Thank you, Senator. And I'd hurry along quickly if I were you.
Yeah.
Bruce Decker, Jan Ronci, and Kay Friedman.
You can grab this other chair. There you go. Just identify yourself and go and give your testimony.
My name is Bruce Decker. I live in Hood River County. And appreciate the opportunity to address this issue. I'm a licensed Oregon pesticide consultant and as a branch manager and field representative for Wilbur Ellis Company. I consult with many Hood River and the Dalles area tree fruit growers. I also farm 70 acres of tree fruits. Approximately 99% of the farmland in Hood River County and most of the orchard land in Wasco County is within 5 miles of at least one school and would therefore be severely impacted by this onerous and unnecessary legislation. Many productive farms would be forced to cease operations within the 1 mile no spray zone around schools. And if I read the legislation correctly, that includes all power driven spray applications, not just aerial, which most every commercial application is with power driven equipment. So that would effectively eliminate any of those applications in those within that 1 mile zone. During my years of consulting, I have worked closely with several growers who farm with orchards immediately abutting school properties, and it's very common in Hood River County. Most of you, I'm sure, have never seen the situations there, but it's also worth noting that these farmers have raised their own children in very close proximity to these orchards, and that they have sent their own children to these neighboring schools. These growers use best management practices, rely on licensed consultants, and they themselves are licensed private applicators. In addition to abiding by comprehensive state and federal laws and regulations, these growers make every effort to further minimize the impacts of their operations with their pest control applications by making these applications when weather conditions would minimize drift potential. They don't make applications during periods that school is in session, and they often make a particular effort to make applications, for instance, on a Saturday morning early to minimize or to extend the interval between application and when children would be present. These growers have maintained excellent working relationships with their neighboring schools without the heavy burden of this type of overregulation and the resultant destruction of their livelihood that this bill would create. Pesticide usage is already one of the most regulated commercial activities in the state of Oregon. Crop protection materials undergo very extensive testing and regulation, which is at least equivalent to what goes on with pharmaceuticals. It is interesting to note that despite the fact
Could you summarize the rest of your testimony, since we do have your written testimony and we'll read it?
Okay.
Thanks.
Well, one point that I'd like to make is that despite the fact that the incidence of claims for workman's comp, where you're working with farm workers that would have obviously a higher level of exposure than would the children that we're talking about here, this is a very, very low incidence of claims for injuries related to pesticide applications. I guess just in summary, by using best management practices and with current existing laws that are in place, safe mechanism exists to protect our school children and all citizens of the state of Oregon.
Thank you.
My name is Kay Friedemann. I live at 915 Reuben Boise Road, Dalles, Oregon. I live about 2.5 miles west of town next to industrial forest land. And I thank you very much, Senator Avakian, for allowing me to testify today. And thank you, committee members. I was asked to testify by Senator Walker. I met with her last week about Senate Bill 20. And I wanted to tell her that my husband and I believe that our child was harmed by pesticide exposure. We adopted an infant in the early early 80s, and she turned out to be a genius in math, and I'm trained as an elementary school teacher and trained in early childhood education, and recognized that she had extreme skill. She learned to carry numbers in addition when she was four. I mean, she learned that on her own, and that's not taught until the last half of second grade in our school district. When she was a sixth grader, she scored in the 98th percentile in a national math test and attracted the attention of a university that began to give her information about advanced study of mathematics. And during sixth grade, she became sick with mysterious ailments. She and our horses, both species, had unusual illnesses. I hauled her to a number of specialists, and no one could determine what was really wrong with her. And that was the same with the horses. We just couldn't figure out why they were having health problems. By the time our daughter was in seventh grade, a year later, she could not keep up with her peers in math. And because of what later became apparent neurological damage, we felt that she had a pesticide exposure. We thought we had well contamination. And as a matter of fact, we had my doctor had told the Department of Agriculture and the Pesticide Analytical and Response Center several years earlier that he thought I was having a pesticide exposure. We could never find contaminant in our well. And eventually we determined that we were probably being exposed to illegally applied pesticides, possibly used to control problem mammals in timber. And when the Agricultural Protection Bill, ORS 30.930 to 30.947, was passed, that problem escalated, and we then determined that the illness that we then saw in horses could be relieved by removing horses from contaminated pasture and providing mineral supplements. Eventually, our veterinarian determined that our horses were likely having symptoms of deer hair loss syndrome. And we have done subsequent testing and found dithiocarbamate pesticides and that apparently are being sprayed illegally over properties that border forest land. And because there is so little regulation of applicators, and I have been told by the head of the Pesticide Investigation Unit at the Department of Agriculture that pesticide applicators spray on the honor system in Oregon. Because there is so little regulation and because we see so much drift, drift that goes very long distances. We've seen helicopter applicators spray, and calculations, triangulations from photographs show that they were spraying 240 to 500 feet above the canopy when they are uphill and upwind from a populated area. Those types of spray applications drift much more than a mile. We've seen drift as far as 4 or 5 miles from clear cuts. I think a minimum of a 1 mile buffer around schools would be a good starting point at this time and until we can come up with some better solutions. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you for giving us this opportunity to speak with you all. My name is Robin Winfrey, and I'm actually representing Jan Ronsey, who was taken ill this morning because of roadside spray in her area. But she sent written testimony, and I will just highlight a few things out of that written testimony, which you should have a copy of. Jan was involved for many years in diverse fields of scientific research. Her first research was in air pollution inquiries with Dr. T.J. Chow at Scripps Institute of Oceanography and Dr. Claire Patterson, showing that the lead in the environment came from the lead additive in gasoline, which ultimately resulted in the ban on leaded gasoline. She also, Jan wanted me to make sure that I mention that children are our most important national resource, that children's brains, development, and behavior are important to their health, to their ability to contribute to society throughout life, and to the well-being of future generations. And most importantly, children cannot make choices about their environment. It is up to adults to make the right decisions to ensure that they are protected. There is an article, Chemicals in the Environment and Developmental Toxicity to Children, a Public Health and Policy Perspective, that has been published in Environmental Health Perspectives, and there is a website link on your on the first sheet of this testimony that I am submitting on behalf of Jan that I hope that you all can look at. For nearly 30 years, Jan has engaged in organic no-spray farming and forestry. Her experience in forestry research, combined with her experience with organic farming and forestry, convinces her that man-made pesticides are not necessary for either farming or forestry. Although the farmers and foresters who oppose the school buffer will claim they will go out of business, it is simply not true. Restricting pesticide use will not force them out of the business of agriculture or forestry. I urge you to protect our children from secondhand drift exposures to pesticides by supporting and voting for Senate Bill 20, providing a pesticide-free buffer around schools. We do protect salmon. We understand that's important, and we should protect our children too. Thank you very much.
Next up will be Eric Geyer, Linda Gray, and Jeff Heater. While the three of you are coming up, let me say that there were three sheets of three sign-up sheets that were hidden on the table over there. We didn't know about. There is no way that we will get through all of you today, not even close. Because these committee members have got other committees starting at 8:30. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take the folks that drove from 100 miles away or more and try and balance that in the few minutes we have remaining between those that are opponents and proponents of the bill. And for the rest of you, we apologize we couldn't get you on this morning. For those that are testifying, if you keep your testimony to 1 or 2 minutes, we'll be able to get more folks up today. Thanks. Go right ahead. Whenever you're ready, just give us your name and launch right in.
Chair Avakian, members of the committee, my name is Eric Geyer. I'm a forester for Roseburg Forest Products. I will be very brief with my comments today and summarize what I have. I have provided written testimony. I want to say that there is no evidence that forestry applications of pesticides have any impacts whatsoever beyond the immediate area. In fact, ODF has monitoring data demonstrating the protection of waters from drift when herbicides are used in compliance with the Forest Practices Act. And I want to stress that that is exactly what we do. Example that was provided earlier discussed some illegal application, whether or not it was. That's beyond what forestry application would be applying. Herbicide applications are not in the concentrations that homeowners might have. So this is a distinction between unlicensed applicators and licensed applicators. As unlicensed applicators, homeowners actually have the highest concentrations of application. They apply more frequently and they're in closer proximity to schools. The example of herbicide application for 6 straight years on forestry ground would, frankly, put us out of business. We don't do that. We apply for seedlings, and it's usually a 2-year process, and we're done. And that ground is essentially left alone until rotation, with occasional exceptions. I've never heard of any forestry application that runs 6 years in succession. And I would like to say, too, a number of people keep bringing up the children. I have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, and I live in a rural area. I have 5 acres where I apply herbicides to grow trees, And I also live very near where forestry applications take place. With a proper understanding of the science behind properly applied herbicides, I have absolutely no fear of health problems for those children. In fact, my three-year-old can do addition. So I would like to say that Senate Bill 20 attempts to fix a problem that does not exist. It compromises the safety of lawful licensed applicators by allowing names and records to be submitted in public, and I urge you to dismiss Senate Bill 20. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Linda Gray. I live at 5125 Crusher Drive in Parkdale, Oregon. I'm a third-generation orchardist, and today I represent 350 growers from the Hood River Valley that strongly oppose Senate Bill 20. Just to make this brief, just a little history of the valley. We consist of more than 15,000 acres of tree fruit that produces over 200,000 tons of apples, pears, and cherries annually, making us the largest producers of pears in the United States. The fruit industry is the number one economic factor in Hood River County. Approximately 6,000 acres are within 1 mile of school property, and the remaining 9,000 acres of orchards are within 5 miles of school property. If Senate Bill 20 passes, the entire Hood River Valley would be impacted and ultimately forced to stop growing the fruit that has made it famous throughout the world. We do participate in best management practices. We've learned to apply pesticides as needed, not by the calendar. And we have learned to use mating disruptions and other softer chemicals and techniques that require the most innovative scientific data that does not come cheaply. Growers in Hood River County are self-monitored. We check the weather conditions and spray equipment religiously to ensure that the spray is on the targeted pests. Not one orchardist can afford to have his spray miss this targeted areas. Northwest fruit is one of the safest fruits grown in the world. We have very stringent regulations. It makes me think that if we do not help to keep these growers in business by letting us farm, that the current pet food contamination could very well be included by human consumption, the foods that humans consume. It's been a struggle the past several years to grow. We've had severely imposed regulations and population increases that make it very difficult to keep on. We just have to get more education, and I think, and our growers think, that more education is needed, and communication and education is the key, not Senate Bill 20. Thank you for your time.
Good morning. My name is Jeff Heater. Thank you, Senator Avakian and members of the committee, for allowing us to testify today. I'm a farmer in Wasco County. I grow cherries and apples, and I represent the Wasco County Fruit and Produce League and the approximate 80 farmers there who farm on about 8,000 acres, mostly of cherries. Linda said before, Wasco County is well known for its cherry farming and grows 30% of all the sweet cherries in North America. And over 50% of the farmland in Wasco County would be affected by this 1 to 5 mile radius with the schools. One of the faults I see in this Senate bill is that submitting this written plan up to 14 to 21 days in advance of applications, that's the most impractical part about this is that farming in the Columbia River Gorge, like Senator Metzger alluded to, we have to work around the wind, and trying to predict the weather 14 to 21 days in advance is pretty much impossible. You pretty much have to go from day to day, and if you're forced to make a plan and submit it to the appropriate authorities and then make an application or don't make it at all, I think that this would actually force people to spray in conditions that would cause more drift. And that is something that nobody in agriculture or forestry wants to see. The problem with the bill is that it would basically make it illegal to use pesticides within 5 miles of the school and essentially change the way agriculture is done throughout the state. And we don't have good answers for what would happen to a farmer that was in 1 mile or 5 miles of a school. If he's not allowed to farm his 100 acres, what is going to happen with his land? What is he going to do? That's all I need to say.
Okay, today. Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Dr. Paul Engelking, Jake Gibbs, and Rick Jacobson. Dr. Engelking, why don't you go ahead and go first?
Okay, thank you. I'm Paul Engelking. I live at 32 North Alder Street in Lowell, Oregon. For identification purposes, I'm a professor of chemistry at the University of Oregon. And my studies include the detection of molecules inside and outside the laboratory. I became acquainted with drift in another context, detecting the molecular cousins of many of the ending pesticide chemicals, things like diazinon and such. In another context, those were chemical and biological agents. In our work, we discovered a method that could detect molecules that had a specific atom in them. And so we were interested in molecules that contained phosphorus and pitched this as a application to the United States Army, who's interested in phosphorus-containing molecules in the field. In that time, I became aware of the studies on drift for such molecules. And in that area, that is called dispersion. What I discovered in comparing that literature to the pesticide literature is that in the pesticide literature, drift is mainly considering droplets, larger droplets, that deposit the chemicals on adjacent crops. So in one category that I was more familiar with, the target organ was the human lung. I discovered that there was a large disparity between these two types of studies. One in the study where you look at droplets depositing on surfaces, the smaller molecules, the vaporized molecules, and the smaller droplet particles would actually not be observed in the drift studies. So you could put out a drift card in the field, an adjacent field, and you wouldn't see these things because they would actually pass over it and be transported much greater distances downwind. And so I believe that when you're looking at drift in drift studies, people talk about buffer zones that are a very short distance from the edge of a field or so. They're talking on the order of meters. But when you're talking about dispersal of chemical agents, small molecules have already vaporized, of course, smaller droplets, which all form a percentage of any chemical application by revolatilization of the molecules from the surfaces. For example, a molecule like diazinon works by the revolatilizing on the surface of the plant tissue and the insects actually breathing the vapor that's of that molecule that's local. These molecules are designed to have a spike vapor pressure. When those molecules get into the air by exposure to sunlight, warmth, heat, they will then be transported a larger distance than most of the drift studies will indicate. because they'll go pass right over the vegetation that the drift studies would normally look at deposition on, and they'll be passing down larger distances. The human lung is extremely capable of extracting those molecules then out of the air. And so a dispersion model that might be used in another context would see a much larger dispersion for human targets at a larger distance away from fields than the short-range drift models that are used in agriculture. I'd like to just bring to your attention a quote from a recent study from a EPA investigation of drift in the Fresno area in California. And the quote is simply, "Spray drift is the primary airborne transport pathway by which pesticides can move off-site and potentially damage non-target crops and native vegetation. This exposure is the result of near-field drift, less than 1 kilometer, of relatively large spray droplets, and far-field drift, 1 to 10 kilometers, of very small droplets, less than 100 micrometers, at the time of application." That also includes volatilized vapor particles. Molecules. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you, Senator Rockian. Rick Jacobson, I'll underscore, recently retired president and CEO of Norpak Foods. I want you to know I did not travel from Bend this morning. I came in last night. I no longer get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I am here, again, representing Norpak, and George Smith, the president, in opposition to Senate Bill 20. As some of you may know, Norpak, over 4 years ago, embarked upon a stewardship and sustainability initiative in collaboration with Food Alliance and OSU. Just a point of interest, tonight I'm going to be testifying in support of the Oregon Sustainable Agricultural Resource Center to be included in the co-chair's budget, the Ways and Means. We've made a lot of strides in accomplishing our objective of establishing very rigorous sustainability criteria, including implementation of integrated pest management. To date, just as a piece of information, 38 Norpak member farms have completed independent third-party audits and exceed the criteria. That amounts to 63 farmers and approximately 40,000 acres of Willamette Valley farmland that meets today's understanding of sustainability practices. We've had support from the governor in his Oregon Solutions Program, the Oregon Board of Sustainability, OSU, the Institute of Natural Resources, ODA, and a host of other agencies and folks that are concerned about our practices. This is to point out that Norpak takes its responsibilities in changing market demands and public policy very seriously. I guess the first thing that comes to mind in opposing this bill is that it's unnecessary and overly burdensome in an industry that's already one of the most regulated. But more importantly, what we're concerned about is the unintended consequences of the intent of this proposed law. Norpak Sustainability Initiative includes the implementation of integrated pest management in dealing with plant disease and pest management in crops grown for processing. Integrated pest management is a tool that assesses the economic threshold of a plant disease or pest. We make these decisions to spray a material based on a host of issues such as sweep netting, observation by scouts, in trapping. When a particular disease or pest does not rise to the economic threshold, the decision to spray may be postponed or eliminated for that period. Should the disease or pest exceed that threshold, then a material that will be used that is the least harmful for the environment to control that pest. These decisions are time sensitive, and they must be made within the parameters of weather conditions. Should Senate Bill 20 become law, no longer would that be possible. The farmer would have to make his decisions based on a calendar, approved rates, and probably using the most effective material to avoid the negative economic consequences on his crop. So no longer would disease and pest management diagnosis and prescription application be a consideration for that farmer. Should the bill become law, the progress we've made on minimizing plant disease and pest management tools is going to be reversed. That is the unintended consequence of this bill. Norpak and other companies in the industry are now responding to the market and public policy issues in terms of developing sustainability practices. We would no longer be able to meet the sustainable integrated pest management because one decision made on a calendar application would negate the audit compliance for sustainable certification and verification.
Mr. Jacobs, I'm going to need you to wrap it up right away because we need to get
I guess what time. I would say is I encourage the committee to support the growing emphasis on sustainability practices and agriculture and decline this bill for no other reason to avoid the unintended consequences. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Bakken, members, I'll be very, very brief. Thank you. My name is Jake Gibbs. I'm a forester with Lone Rock Timber out of Roseburg, Oregon, managing forest lands in six southwest Oregon counties. Oppose Senate Bill 20 and urge you to dismiss the bill entirely without amendments or further discussion. Senate Bill 20 purports to protect children from exposure to pesticides while never demonstrating that current laws and regulations are ineffective. There's not documented harm. It's poorly written, targeting state-licensed applicators while making no mention of unlicensed or general use applications of pesticides. State-licensed applicators are our most trained and qualified people to be using these materials. To further restrict them and not untrained people seems illogical. Creates a new set of management constraints, both spatial and temporal, on private and public land managers. How these constraints will be relayed to the landowners is not identified. With every road, as Senator Prozonsky has already identified, that language is very burdensome. Allows the Attorney General or a person or a school district to bring action to enforce this legislation. This will result in an unreasonable amount of litigation brought on by anyone, affected individuals or not. This is a poor method of protecting the citizens of Oregon. And it's circumventing another important point that hasn't been brought up. Circumvents the rulemaking process by bypassing existing boards and commissions responsible for developing policy and regulations for state agencies. I think this is also a poor, another example of poor government. So I'd urge you to oppose Senate Bill 20.
Thank very you. Good. Thank you, you three, very much. For everybody else who came today, thank you very much for coming. It will be impossible for us to get other folks in today. We had about 18 other folks signed up in opposition to the bill, and a good deal of folks also signed up in support of the bill. Everybody living within 100 miles, it looks like. So if we get the bill set for another hearing, we'll get that notice out so folks can come back, and who knows, maybe we'll need to set up a little bit more time as well. But thank you all for coming. With that, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 20, and we are adjourned. Hang on to those.